businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 137 of the Killing It
Podcast.
I'm Carl, joined as always by Ryan and Dave. Ryan is in the oddest place we've ever done this specific podcast.
You know, it is. I'm just testing the boundaries of the work from anywhere concept. Not just, you know, locations and destinations, but in a rental car in a parking lot of an IHOP, using 5G and tethering my iPad. I will vouch for the fact that it was not nearly as difficult to get into the studio as I thought it was going to be. And you guys tell me that the audio is okay. So that's a whole new horizon of places to work from.
Yep, it's all good.
It's a thing. Well, let's have a little fun with, before we dive in on the actual topics, guys. What board game do you like most?
So, question. Does Yahtzee count as a board game?
I'm going to go with yes.
All right. Well, then Yahtzee.
Okay.
I have a Yahtzee game that is so old that, you know, I've got the little playing cards from two ex-wives. So, you know.
Ryan, favorite board game?
I will wholeheartedly endorse Scrabble because as a child, I used to play a game with my siblings that we called the dictionary game. And basically it was, we had this massive, humongous, like 80-pound dictionary that my mother had bought. And the game was randomly flip it open to a page, randomly put your finger on the page, somewhere on the page, and pick a word. And you scored points like if you knew the definition of the word. I've always been a word nerd. And so Scrabble is my happy place.
So, all right, I'm going to be anti, like, I'm not into board games, and I have a very particular reason why. And it dates back to college, where all of my friends required games for drinking. And I don't believe drinking requires a game.
Exactly.
I'm a professional without a game. And so this was a huge thing for me, because you'd play the game and not talk to people. And so I've like completely rebelled against it and have had this whole thing about games. But I will now caveat by saying is I am back into D&D. So I will actually say, like, it's not quite a board game, but we do play it with a virtual board and figures and all that kind of stuff. So
exactly.
That's me. But I've never liked it because I don't need a game to drink.
Yeah. Well, so I grew up, I have five brothers. We grew up with games like Scrabble and just everything you could possibly imagine. So in fact, I'm giving you a game for Christmas.
There's an obscure one out there, if you've not heard of it, called Triominoes, right? Sort of like dominoes, but with triangles, not rectangles. If you've never played it, it's old. It's been around for a million years. It causes a lot of competition and swearing among me and my siblings. And
right.
It's I think that's the best side effect of a board game,
yeah.
Right? You know, you got to get somebody so upset that they flip the table.
Well, Uno is how you teach people to swear.
Exactly.
Well, are you still relying on a frustrating patchwork of legacy solutions? Modernize your cybersecurity and data protection with Acronis Cyber Protect Cloud. It's a single solution that combines backup, anti-malware, and endpoint protection management. As an MSP, you can easily improve your client's security posture, eliminate complexity, and generate more recurring revenue. Learn more about Acronis Cyber Protect Cloud at acronis.com. So topic one, I loved this because the framing is just delightful. It's a piece by Axios that examines the idea of looking at the tech companies as nation states. And in fact, I have to couple that with an article in Foreign Affairs magazine at foreignaffairs.com, where they additionally look at digital powers reshaping the global order. The two paired so nicely together, like a wine and a cheese. But this idea of looking at tech giants as nation states, and they put everything on a triangle. They put globalists versus tech utopians and national champions. guys, are these companies so big that they are their own nation states? Is this a good lens to analyze them?
Well, I mean, if you look at the budget of a Google or an Amazon or a Facebook, look at their budget compared to half the states in the union and three quarters of the countries in the world. I mean, yeah, it's essentially equivalent to that. But I will have to say that the science fiction has always been that these big corporations are going to, you know, run the world. And I don't know that that's going to necessarily happen, but they clearly have their place and they are outside national boundaries. Just recently, we had an entire international get together to talk about how we begin to curb that. So it's a serious thing.
See, and it is a serious thing. And it was predicted over a decade ago, right? If you guys remember the book, The Big Switch by Nicholas Carr, right? So when he was teaching us all the concept of utility computing and everything moving online and into data centers. And the front half of that book is all about technology and market dynamics and what the locationless capabilities of the internet were actually going to enable. That was phenomenal. The back half of that book, if you go back there and read that, was all about how borderless internets were going to be a problem, and there because countries would use the internet to do things across borders that they couldn't do in the physical world, but actually how the technology companies themselves would rise to a level of importance that was supra country, right? There's no one country that can control the whole worldwide internet, and therefore the companies that control that kind of technology actually have to be thought of as needing regulation from some entity that is beyond a single country. I think you're 1,000% on target. They are nation states functionally.
Well, interestingly, if you put this in the context of the U.S. State Department firing up their new Bureau of Cyber in order to think about diplomatic relations with other countries, there's probably going to be a factor of thinking about companies in their relations, considering that it's not physical space, right? It is private space. Some of it is public, but some of it is dominated by, private companies. Like, I do not buy into the notion of Facebook as the town square. It is a public, it is a private space. It is not a town square, but there are pieces of what's going on that are quasi-public at best or worst, depending on your perspective. So there is some real thinking to be done about these companies at this level of size with this level of influence that need to be managed at some level as their own nation state. And by the way, they're not all friendly either.
Right. Well, and they're also, these companies are taking on challenges that used to be left to governments. Things like getting us into space, right? Literally, it used to be no one had the money to have a space race except a government. And now there's multiple companies racing to make that happen. And the, you know, putting up internet balloons all over the world, right? And there's many, many things that are so big that we used to only think a government could do that. So in some sense, it's good that they're doing these things, but they are ultimately, if you decide you're going to put up internet around the world, you're not responsible to anybody. Where at least the government is ultimately responsible to somebody.
And, well, exactly, right? The government is responsible to its citizens and to other countries via treaties and all of these agreements and the international law. These companies are deliberately trying to make themselves separate from the regulatory environment. And in a nutshell, exactly what Carl just described is precisely why I ain't very interested in the metaverse as envisioned by our friend at the new Meta company. I think that is, you know, Dave, you say it's not the town square. Well, if he gets his way, there won't be any more town squares because we're all just going to be WALL-E citizens sitting on a virtual headset existing in the virtual space, right? If you haven't seen the movie WALL-E recently, go back and watch it. It was surprisingly accurate in how it predicted today.
Nah, I don't buy into these versions of that forward, you know, meta verse, mostly because items that make you look like a dork when you wear them on your face don't work long term. It just is not viable. That's not
well,
the way I think.
You know,
this is
remember
go.
The Google glasses. I've got a friend who I probably know and I don't know, just met her 3 months ago, but she said she started doing this thing with the, you know, tapping on her glasses, and I'm like, "What the hell are you doing?" She said, "I'm just looking through my text messages," and I'm like, "Oh my god! Like, you have Google glasses that actually look like normal glasses, and they actually work." So, you know, that technology failed for the wrong reasons. But someday your 3D headset is gonna look like normal glasses. So,
yeah, look so less I'm gonna, dorky.
Before we run out of time on this one, because I'm about to hand it off, but I'm actually going to tell you that I think the metaverse is actually audio. And what I think is I think a device like an AirPod will get an ability to sense more around it with some kind of embedded camera that you won't use, but it will talk to you in your ear. And you will get information fed to you in your ear via that vision, that always on, because think about how easy everyone walks around with AirPods and it's not a thing versus something on your face. And by the way, again, technology that makes you nauseous, like, I don't know, VR, also not a viable option, but you can completely see an embedded little camera that's watching the world and whispering into your ear. That's more the way
well,
I think it's
going. Well, and I'm ready for the implant, so I don't even need the little thing in my ear. I just like...
No, I do not want to reboot my head.
Form factors to be determined, but yeah. So guys, topic number two, I want to jump in because, you know, as a group of three individuals who make a living saying words and hoping that people listen and understand and do the things that we ask, our next topic is something that is absolutely fascinating to me. We are constantly on a search for real world application use cases of artificial intelligence. And the article that we're linking to in the show notes goes to an interesting application. AI for the purpose of parsing language to uncover hidden sentiment. Now, that sounds like the future world, if anything that we've discussed on this show ever did, because it has always been the assumption that humans were the only ones who could parse meaning and sentiment and not just the context and content of language, but the human application of language. And we always said, well, the robots will never get there. So robots can't write poetry and robots can't write books and robots can't design attractive things, no matter how intelligent they become. Except that in this application, if you buy their logic parsed forward, what they're saying is artificial intelligence can tell when you're fibbing. And that's only just a little bit away from all the nuance that we have thought was our domain as humans. What do you guys think, A, about the general AI topic, but B, about this specific application?
I don't need an AI to smell corporate bullshit. Like, I mean, look, I say that because it's funny, but I actually what I will then extend this to go is this is making a human skill better and is making that information more accessible. Journalists, researchers, people with ears can detect the general patterns of some of the bullshit and some of the insanity coming out from these investor pitches, listening to language patterns and tones. That's a skill we as humans have, but yes, we can put this through the computer. We can make the AI learn faster, smarter, better, and give us more information on that. But that's the acceleration of a human skill, not purely unique to the machine. Now, don't get me wrong. I love this application. I think it's super cool. But the reason it works is because we as humans understand it, can teach the computers how to do it, and they can find the patterns much more efficiently.
Well, and computers are, I mean, it's what they do. They can do things bigger, better, faster. There was a time a while back when the Israelis, when they had these detention centers, they would flash for like a thousandth of a second or something, a known terrorist. It was too fast for your human eyes to see, but your unconscious brain, people who knew who that was would have an elevated heart rate, and they would instantly be able to tell who were the bad guys, because why would you know this international terrorist if you were not also associated with them? And, you know, but that's the kind of thing that once you let the technology dig in, you will find many, many things that a human being couldn't, because you can sift and sort and do all kinds of stuff, but not to actually find the stuff that is a millionth more accurate in terms of detecting things. Although I have to say, Dave, I completely agree with you. We're sort of at 99% there by just being human and knowing what a BS detector is, you know. And if a CEO or a politician is talking, it's probably BS.
Yeah. Is he talking? Yes.
Yes. Are his lips moving?
Exactly. Are his lips moving? Evidently, it is BS. But I'll see. That's the use case that they're highlighting in this article again, which I do think serves a purpose in the corporate world. Right. There is so much double talk. There is so much like code phrases, lingo that is not just designed to obscure the true meaning of what they're saying. You know, hey, everything is fine. Everything is good, except for the little nuggets that we're dropping in indicate that, no, actually, we're going to miss our revenue next quarter and our stock is going to tank, even though we said it with a smile, right? Like, if you can eliminate that kind of uncertainty and deliberate misleading in the financial world and in earnings reports and things like that, I think that serves the public good, right? I think that to be plain spoken is a very valuable thing. And it's almost like lawyers and CEOs and Wall Street humans, they've gone to school for the purpose of learning how not to speak.
But straight. I do have to question that, like how much public good could actually come from this? If it's one thing to say we're hiding the fact that, you know, we think that we're an inch away from a nuclear meltdown or whatever, that like that almost never happens. It's much more common that we aren't sure what we're going to do next quarter or whether we're going to hire enough people between now and Christmas. And we don't, I mean, we just legitimately have to say something positive as possible. And we don't have any really good positive news to back it up. Is that like worth spending any time, effort, or money trying to figure out? That's just, you know, they're putting their spin on it, and everybody knows it. And it's not like the outright lies that, you know, manipulate the market, right? And then it does nothing to stop Elon Musk from just tweeting whatever the hell he feels like at the moment.
Exactly. I would say that is exactly the end case that we're trying to address, right? It's the deliberate manipulation where imagine the flip side of this article. If this software can be used to identify when you are BSing, then you could probably also turn that around to create BS that is hard for humans to detect. You could use the algorithm in reverse, essentially, and you could come up with ways to describe deliberately misleading things to intentionally manipulate the market, and all the humans are going to listen and go, well, I mean, that sounded okay. It sounded fine, right? I think that's the use case that we're trying to plan for.
I do have to question, if you ran this algorithm against the folks who ran Enron, would it detect anything? Because a true actual psychopath will believe the fictional world that they are telling you about.
Yeah, they would pass the lie detector test because they don't believe they're lying.
So, cool. All right, are we done with that? Has that run its course?
I think so. I think we've covered that one.
Alrighty. Well,
what is there to say?
that gives us a little extra time to talk about Facebook, which is in the news for a number of reasons. But today, the thing that I think is most interesting is shutting down their facial recognition system. And this is so amazing to me that you can upload pictures and it will instantly say, oh, is that Dave? Is that Ryan? Is that Carl? Boop, boop, boop. And its accuracy is over the top. And they're not just shutting it down, but they are getting rid of it. It's like they're not putting it on the shelf for later use. They are deleting the database. And I just think it's an amazing step. And I wonder, is this just a response to companies like Apple who say, hey, your privacy actually matters and we're going to sell privacy first? Or is there some, did somebody grow a spine at Facebook or a conscience? Or, what, you know, why are they doing this?
Yes and no. so like, I'm going to quip that, you know, the tech is really bad when Facebook goes, you know, I think we're going to have to get out of this one. They're the ones that are like, you know, oh yeah, get more outrage, pump that machine. It makes us money. Like, and they're going, you know, this one looks really dangerous. Now that said, I suspect this is both the right thing to do, and they probably have made a smart product decision. My suspicion is that they've also figured out, and by the way, this is me conjecturing, not, I don't have any data on this one, but my suspicion is they figured out that the feature was somewhat underutilized, and people were just as happy tagging their friends as they were letting the machine do it. And this is an easy one to seed some space on and do the right thing. Because they've got a pretty proven track record of making good product choices that make them more money, not just doing things that are magnanimous.
So could this be as simple as if I have to tag it myself, I spend more minutes on Facebook?
Or you engage better. It could be like, I bet there's a product decision behind this where they've figured out the, you know what, if we do it in a way where, you know, it is driven by the user base, we see better engagement or we see more accuracy. Like, there's something to it, I suspect, where doing the right thing and doing the product thing aligned for them. And this was an easy win to go, yep, we've been thinking about it. That makes a ton of sense. It gets us some good PR. That's not to say that I'm not looking and going, that's a good move. Like, I'm glad to see that they're looking at this and saying, yeah, that tech isn't good for us. They probably are also making it for good business decisions, but it's the right thing to get out of.
Well, but see, this is the problem. For nearly 2 years now, consecutive, the three of us have been saying facial recognition technology is a good idea, but it is fraught with ethical and bias challenges that require not just controls inside the software and reviews of the efficacy of the software, but also human oversight to ensure that we're not further causing problems. We've been saying facial recognition in the wrong hands is a very bad thing, right? It is a good tool used for very bad purposes. And with a chuckle, every time we've discussed this, we've said, can you imagine the, you know, really powerful, effective facial recognition technology in the wrong hands, Facebook? And then Facebook actually freaking agreed with us.
So are you saying Mark Zuckerberg listens to our show?
I think he probably does. And secretly, we could give him some advice. we could give him some guidance and some product recommendations, as Dave said. See, again, I will take a slightly more cynical point of view. I don't think they did it because it was the right thing to do. I think they did it because in today's climate, they needed a PR win. And this was a throwaway feature for them that they could get rid of without hampering their economic engine. But they've got a bad reputation on burning down society. They've got a bad reputation on user privacy. They've got some very recent, very public testimony in a Senate hearing that is making them look terrible. And they needed to go out there and get a new win. They announced a name change, and the world collectively just went, whatever.
Yeah.
Right? Like, meh. They call themselves Meta, and I think the internet basically called them Meta. You know, who cares, right? They needed more than that, and this was a hammer that they could bring down. Now, again, Carl, I'm where you are on this one. They didn't just stop using it. They didn't just decommission this. They deleted the data, or deleting the data. Now, what that says to me is, we ain't being told the whole thing, because clearly behind the cloak of secrecy, something is going on with that data, that it's not just that they're not going to continue functioning that way. But it's one of those, it's so bad that not only I can't have it, but I can't allow
lines, we had a story a while back about the number of lawsuits, right? I wonder how many subpoenas they've been getting and if it's an increasing number of subpoenas. And again, this is me just conjecturing. Like, are they being asked for this stuff by so many governments that now it's much easier for them to say, we don't do that anymore? And then the next question is, okay, are you deleting them from the backups?
That's a super interesting angle because I just covered that over on Business Tech with Signal, actually. Signal did a disclosure of all the warrants that they've had, one of the warrants they've had to deal with, and the incredible level of information being asked by law enforcement, by police departments in order to do this. That's a very reasonable thing to go, you know what, we don't want to deal with this. We're trying to get out of this. Here we go, delete all the data. By the way, I will put on my hat for this one because I continue to believe that there's money to be made in a data management practice for businesses where you're actually asking, why are we collecting this data? What is it used for? Do we understand the downside? And are we being very critical to what we consume and hold on to in business data? I think we hold on to too much, and I think we collect too much, thinking we might need it without actual justification for why. And I think there's a whole practice area here.
See, and in a world where we are now, as practitioners in technology, more exposed to regulation and to insurance oversight and all of those legal implications associated with our data, I think managing information and storage is one thing. I think analyzing it for business insight is another thing. As you're describing, analyzing it for risk management, like if you store all of this data and then it gets out, here are the bad things that could happen to you. We've all had this default mentality of if it's customer data, you keep it forever. If it's identifiable, right, if you could parse it for marketing purposes, you keep every shred of data. There's going to come a court case sometime soon that makes us all go, you know what? Hanging on to other people's credit card numbers might be convenient, but maybe I don't want that vulnerability.
Well, the ultimate rule of being an information vendor is you never throw information away. And, I'm going to add a link to a Gizmodo article that notes the amount of money that is being charged to, support a subpoena or a court case or whatever. And I'm not sure that it's necessarily a profit center, but there is an awful lot of money if you're talking about the thousands and thousands of court cases. So maybe Facebook was looking at it and saying, supporting this kind of warrant search is far more expensive than it's ever going to be worthwhile. It could be a loss center for them. Again, just wild speculation because I got nothing else to do.
But it is wildly interesting speculation, and that's what we do here on Killing.
it's the offshoot of this is how many companies are going to get out of facial recognition proactively, and how many are going to double down on it and continue to invest?
Right.
And it's interesting to me to think that there are, I would believe that the ones that are delivering it as a service, like an AWS, are going to continue to do it because they've got a different model than Facebook in this case, which I believe is an implementer, but more importantly is offering it kind of as a feature more than as something you subscribe to. So I could see AWS going, oh yeah, we're going to invest in recognition. By the way, that's their recognition with K, right? Their actual product around that, and probably Microsoft too, who's going to say, we're going to invest in these because these are products we intend to sell, versus a Facebook that's using it and has now decided, you know what, the use of this opens up more than me, and we can probably make a product decision around it. That'll be interesting to see who gets out for what reasons.
Well, and I think most of the people or organizations buying facial recognition are probably police oriented. And as a result, there's a certain amount of liability, like, oh, you provided this data the police came and arrested the wrong guy, and now, you know, tick, 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 like, we don't need the liability for it.
Well, except that I will report from the trenches of the industry. Yesterday, I was at a conference event with guys who do infrastructure and systems integration at the component level. The chip providers, the board providers, the storage, the drive, the NAND, right? All of the itty bits inside of the machines that we sell. And I will say that more than one manufacturer of a brand name you would recognize reported that the fastest growing use case for storage, bandwidth consumption, and processing is video surveillance and facial recognition. All of the known brands in our industry that sell these kinds of system level capabilities, they are hawking their wares. I mean, again, I grew up as a storage guy. I look at video surveillance and I say, look at all the disk it's going to chew, right? Like it's going to be a big issue in our industry.
Well, we certainly will revisit this topic because I don't think we've heard the whole story. And sadly, that will do it for episode 137 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.